My name is Julie Turney, and this is the HR Sound Off podcast show, the show created for HR and business professionals to discuss pertinent topics and trends as it relates to our professions. We're going to have amazing conversations with HR professionals from all over the world, get to learn their origin stories, how did they get into this profession, what do they love about being here, and how they want to set the record straight on that one misconception that really drives them crazy about our profession. Are you ready? I'm ready. Then let's sound off. Hi, everyone, and welcome to today's episode of the HR Sound Off podcast show. My name is Julie Turney, and I am your host. How are you doing today? Wherever you are in the world, I hope that you are having a fantastic day. I know these episodes come out on Sundays. I know some people can't wait to hear who I'm speaking to while they fold clothes, cook dinner, take care of duties that you're doing for the rest of the week. So here we are. And I am so excited today to be joined and to be amplifying the voice and the book of Anessa Fike. Anessa, how are you doing today?
Oh my goodness, I'm doing so well. And thank you so much for having me on. I've been watching Julie, as all of us have, for her amazing videos on LinkedIn and other places for a while. So I'm just excited to be here today. Thank you for this.
It's a pleasure.
How are you doing, Julie?
I am doing pretty good. So for our audience, those who may not know Anessa, who is Anessa Fike? What is your HR story? How did you get into HR and where are you now?
Yes, this is always like a longer story than I ever anticipated it's going to be. So
I'll try to shorten it. We've got 30 minutes, Anessa.
Okay. Well, I was going to say, so I actually am a former journalist that fell into HR. And I got into HR almost 15 years ago, which seems, you know, when I think back on it, I'm like, I'm not that old. So it's been 15 years, but 15 years ago. And I actually started in the sort of HR project space and then went to recruiting and talent acquisition and then started to do more and more people leadership. And one of my very first jobs in HR, I actually got to see a lot of different areas of HR and people and talent. So mm-hmm. I did everything from benefits to hiring and firing to mentorship programs to talent acquisition and designing new internal, even manager university that we had with our internal university. And so I was very lucky to be able to kind of jump in and do a lot of different things very early in my career. And mm-hmm. I often say that those first sort of three and a half years of my HR career, it seemed like I had 10 years of that experience,
right.
because we were just mm-hmm. doing so much and I was involved in all these things. Yeah. And so after that, I decided to go out on my own and start my own business, mostly because we were moving and my husband and I wanted to start a family and we did not want to do it. And we were in Washington, D.C. at the time, which I love Washington, D.C. But at that time, mm-hmm. it was like, okay, well, I don't know how we're going to do like the daycare costs and also, you know, the mortgage costs. And so we decided to move back to North Carolina, which is where we are now. And the company I worked with at the time said, we don't really want to open up a state just for one person. And I said, okay. Mm-hmm. And they said, but what if you started your own company and we were your first client? And I thought to myself, you know what? I have never thought about owning my own company. Let me go think about that. And mm-hmm. so that was the start of my company. Almost, it'll be 11 years in July, so 10 and a half years ago at this point. And I mm-hmm. also, when I started my company, I looked around. I had this background in a lot of different HR things and a lot of talent things. And I thought, you know what? I don't want to do the agency recruiting, right? I don't want that model. I mm-hmm. want to do a little bit of both. I want my life to have this flexibility and to have this, you know, sort of like, you know, I don't want this routine. I kind of get bored and restless with the same thing over and over. So I want some, yeah. I want some spice in it, right? I want something in there. Yes. And I looked around and I thought, well, how do I do that? And what I actually came up with was one of the first fractional models in HR before it was mm-hmm. called fractional. And yes. Have been kind of doing that for 10 and a half years. And so it's funny when everyone's like, fractional is a new thing. And I'm like, is it?
is it really?
But we didn't uh-huh. call it fractional then. You know, we called it like interim people leadership and, you know, HR consulting and all that. But it really was one of the first fractional models. And I've done that ever since. And it's been amazing. I started as a solopreneur and now I've grown a team. My husband actually now works with me full time in the business and has since right before COVID. So right in January 2020. And so he and I are the two sort of, you know, chief people officer, fractional chief people officers that work with organizations. And then we also have a team and consultants that we work with and pull in for projects. So it's been an amazing, you know, 10 and a half years. We've worked with more than 120 companies around the world. So we've worked in with, I always say companies, but it's also organizations because sometimes it's nonprofits and sometimes it's, you know, it can be venture backed or private equity, bootstrapped, public, private, nonprofit. And we've also worked in 30 plus countries now. So it's nice. Been a little, you know, it's been a fun ride. We've seen a lot.
Yeah.
And I often say that we've worked in every industry except for oil and gas. So we've really seen all of these types of industries, right? And how they work from academia to government contracting to re-commerce to climate change to tech to CPG and manufacturing. We've seen really all of that. So it's been a really fun ride. And now I wrote this book called The Revolution of Work. And it was, for me, it was the book I wanted to see out in the world and I couldn't find. And I was like, where is this book that mixes stories from people that have had these experiences with what is going on in the larger society and how can we fix what's broken? And so that's exactly why I wrote the book and exactly why I'm here today. Yeah.
Wow. That's awesome. A very interesting and exciting career. And I'm so glad that you are here to share your stories and your experiences with us. So I want to break this down just a little bit for our audience. Okay. So you spent some time in journalism.
Yes.
And then switched from journalism to HR. And so you said you accidentally, you fell into HR.
Right, I fell into it,
It happens to a lot of people, right? Most people go, I fell into HR. But journalism and HR are two completely different professions. I mean, both of them require curiosity.
Right.
But outside of that, there's not that many similarities, right? So what the switch, what brought the switch?
Right. So actually, as I was looking back on it and, you know, I was in my first sort of HR role and I had worked on a lot of different projects that were just on the back burner. And they said, can you work on these projects? And I said, sure. And so it was like, there was a benefits project, there was, you know, redoing onboarding and all these different things. And then when they said to me, will you try recruiting and talent? And I said, I thought, yeah. And you know what I found is that actually talent acquisition and recruiting have a lot of similarities and skill sets to journalism because you're asking people questions. You're trying to gather if they're being authentic with you and giving you that real answer, you know, what, not just what they think you want to hear, right? But the real answer about what they really think. And so it was interesting that I kind of used some of my journalism skills in talent acquisition of like, well, tell me more about that, right? And letting people talk. And you know what is funny is I've, I've actually used journalism, I think most the skills there and most in talent and then also employee relations. Yes. So it's kind of interesting, right?
Investigations.
If you're like trying to do some investigative journalism where you're like, tell me more about that. And you want people to kind of give you more info than they want to. It's kind of the same thing with employee relations, right? Where you're like, so tell me more about that. And then you start to find these inconsistencies, right? Right. So it's very interesting. And I think also in me, I've always been a sort of like a truth seeker and wanting to be a truth teller. And I think that that was very evident in why I went into journalism. And I still want that today. So it's also like one of those things where 10 years ago, you know, or so I started writing on LinkedIn and I started writing on LinkedIn because it was venting. Like I didn't have a content calendar. I didn't want to be, you know, an HR influencer wasn't a thing back then. And I started just putting stuff on LinkedIn about HR and my experiences because I wasn't seeing that out there. I wasn't seeing anyone talking about it. And I thought, you know, why do sales and marketing get to talk about their days and their, you know, what they're annoyed by? And why can't we talk about that? Correct. And I started to decide, you know what, we can talk about this. And so that's kind of why I started doing that then.
Thank you so much for sharing that.
Yeah.
I also heard you say, as you discovered fractional work, which you've been doing for the last 10 and a half years. And I really wanted, and this is part of the reason why I really wanted to have this conversation with you, because I agree with you. I think that a lot of people have been doing fractional work for a very long time. It just, fractional is the new name for consulting,
right.
Far as I'm concerned, right?
Yeah.
Or being a temp, because a lot of times you're doing fractional work to either cover someone who's on mat leave or gone on some extended leave, or you're helping an organization build the role and to build the team, and then you go in and you come out, right? But give us a little bit more context on what fractional means, fractional HR means to people today versus what it meant for you 10 and a half years ago. And I also ask that because I think a lot of times people, again, not recognizing that they have options when it comes to practicing HR on their terms, right? Because being in one organization doing the same thing over and over and over again every single day, some people are built to be in organizations, other people, I know definitely I am not built for
me
corporate
neither.
Life. I'm not built for corporate life extensively for a long period of time. I think after 5 years, I'm done.
Yeah.
But
I think three is my thing. It was like 3 years, I gotta go out.
Yeah, exactly. I wanna go in enough to make an impact and then I'm gone. Now at this stage of my career, I'm just like a year, 6 months, and I'm out. Right?
Right.
But I want to just go in and help you build your team. I'll help you hire your HR team. I'll help you put HR systems in place.
Right.
I'll help you with the data finding. I'll help you create whatever you need to present to the leadership team to let them know what the people agenda is. I'll help you with the first set of strategy. I'll help you with the first set of org design. And then I'm out, gone.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm not in for the maintenance. It's kind of like that stuff is, once you kind of are just at a spot where you're just really maintaining, right? That's where I'm like, okay, now I'm bored.
I'm done.
Right. So fractional to me, so I know you asked me a few questions. So did I think fractional was going to be what I was going to do? And really, no, right? Because I wanted to do something a little different than I'd seen in the market. And to be honest, where I got the idea for how I started my business model and how it's been that business model ever since is I kind of looked at my previous employer who was actually my first client, and they did a subscription model. And I said, and they had learned to do that in their business after they went down the advertising model and that wasn't giving them what they needed. So they needed recurring revenue. So they started a subscription model. And that's where I was like, how do I take that business lesson from what that company learned? And I was there during that time when they learned this. How do I take that? And how do I combine that with what I do? Right. And what I love to do and what I love to focus on. And that's really where I was like, you know what? I need a recurring sort of like subscription model. And that to me was like in the form of retainer. Right. And so I thought, okay, I can do this sort of like a lawyer does, which I had, you know, had that experience of working with lawyers on retainer through my experience with being in the HR realm. How do I do that? How do I make that kind of this HR thing? Right. And that's what I use. That's what I use to kind of go into this business model. And it's really interesting because I don't know how many, more than handfuls of people, I would tell them my business model and they would look at me and go, good luck with that. It's never going to work. Right. All of those people have since come back and said, I'm sorry. Can you tell us how this works?
Yes.
Right. And it's like, they were like, oh, that's never going to work. Right. That's never going to work. Yeah. Good luck with that.
And now look at them.
Right.
Full circle.
Right. And they're like, wait, can you tell me how that works again? You know? And so anyway, it's been interesting to see that, but you're right. It did kind of start out as consulting for me, right? I started out as consulting and I would be brought into a lot of the leadership roles earlier in my time as a business owner were, hey, we have under 100 employees. We've never had a head of HR, a VP of HR, a CPO. Can you come in and help us, right? Build this. And that was a lot of what I did. A lot of what I worked with in the first probably 3 years of my business were those organizations that were under, I would say probably under 200 employees, 200, 250. Yeah. And it was building that. It was building all the structure, the processes. And I always tell people, I'm a builder. I love that.
Yeah.
Because that is really what, as we move on, that's what everything else is built on. And if that foundation is not set and it is unsteady, everything else you build on top of it is going to be unsteady. And so I really wanted to make those foundations really sturdy and also be able to stand the test of time, right? Not just doing what's trendy today, not just doing like this new thing that everyone's doing just to do it, but being thoughtful about how do I set this up for now, but also how do I set this up so this organization is set for the next 10, 15, 20 years. And it's interesting because, you know, one thing that pops out during that time for me is you hear these things kind of like fractional where it's like roles-based compensation and all this is a new thing. And I'm like, it's not new. I've been doing it for 15 years, right? And it's just like those things where you, those of us who've done those thoughtful approaches to setting up those foundations have been doing these things for a long time, right? And I think it's interesting that sometimes people pop it up and say, this is new. And it's like, no, it's not.
No, it's not new. It's new because maybe you couldn't find it.
Right.
Maybe you couldn't find it and you started it. And so it's new to you, but it's not new, right? It's
exactly. And so, and then when it kind of has morphed into, and really it was like you said, those early roles, those interim roles, and then it kind of morphed from like interim to fractional because I was always sort of interim, right? It was a time period or, and while it typically got extended, It was for a set time period, right? And it was a set sort of number of months or whatever that looked like. And what it kind of moved towards was more of this fractional model. And to be honest, like the day to day didn't change that much for me because that's how I was operating, right? And so it was just like, oh, okay, now this is what we're calling this thing, this instance. And now I think of fractional. I kind of have some distinctions between definitions of fractional, consulting, advising, and freelance. And what I always say between those four are fractional typically, and this is changing even now, like a little bit. Fractionals typically those people who've had people management experience, have led departments and teams, have experience being in the leadership team meetings, have experience with boards of directors, right? Have those experiences and they're able to take those experiences across several companies and lend that expertise to an organization. And the reason I also say across several companies is because as a fractional person, you cannot just come in and say, this is what we did at Disney. This is what we did at whatever. You can't do that, right? You've got to be able to adapt and and be able to say, I've used these things. Let's input this and let's input this and kind of like, you know, put all these things together for what's going to work for that organization. And for some executives that have only worked in one place, they don't know how to adapt and do that, right? And they don't know how to apply different things. I've seen so many leaders, not just in HR, but just across the board, I've seen so many leaders say, well, this is what we did at Google. We're going to do this here, right? And it never works because they're two very different cultures, two very different businesses. So I think fractional for me is that it's that sort of executive level people manager. You've managed people, you managed teams before, you've seen a couple different organizations. You've had the ability to understand and kind of be agile in what's needed for that organization. So that to me is fractional. And it's, you know, certain number of hours or certain time dynamic in some way. Typically, that can be you're doing an executive role at a fraction of the time and sometimes a fraction of the cost, and they're not paying you that overhead, right? And you're a flexible resource. So they have the ability to flex up and flex down with fractional resources. For me, consulting is like, I think of consulting and advisorship in almost like opposite ways. Consulting for me is more like, you know what project you're working on. So it's a set project within one department. So you're not seeing sort of across several departments or across the whole org. It's one department. And typically the strategy is like, here's a problem. We'd like you to fix it in this sort of way. And you might as a consultant come in and do some of the strategy, but it's really kind of like with the direction of the company, this is what they're trying to achieve, right? And you focus in and you execute on that. And once you're done with that project.
Right.
Advisors are the other for me. It's kind of like while consultants operationalize and execute, advisors only strategize, right? The advisors are never going to come in and execute on and operationalize that strategy. They're just going to tell you what the strategy should be. And so for me, a lot of times you need an advisor and a consultant together to get that same thing. And in fractional, you get both sides of that. So as a fractional exec, you also have to be able to do the strategy and be able to execute and operationalize that strategy. So you have both of those in one. And then I often get asked, well, what's the difference with freelance? And I always say freelance to me is a very, it's first of all, it's an individual contributor typically, right? Like it's not managing people. And then secondarily, it has been for me sort of this like very specific, either technical or creative skill set. So you typically see freelancers who are like graphic designers or UX designers or engineers, something that is very technical or creative. And that's when you pull in a freelancer, right? So that's kind of how I think about those distinctions and the definitions across those four. But like I said, even fractional is varying a little bit because now we're starting to see fractional levels at the HRBP or HR manager level, right? And you may not have that experience across boards of directors or leadership teams, but you know enough around what's that, what that's looking like to be able to come in for like a pre-seed or a seed company who may not need that level of strategy yet, right?
Yeah. So this lets HR people know that they have options.
They have options, yes.
They have options. So you've heard it here, people, you have options. Yes. You can either be fractional if you have that expertise and you're at the top of your HR career and you're thinking like, what's next for me? Maybe fractional work is what is next for you, going into organizations for a period of time, helping them to develop their HR teams or giving them support as a head of HR, helping them to navigate between the business, the board, all the stakeholders, and using your knowledge and expertise to put systems in place, right? So again, to the true form of what I say, a people experience architect, that is what you are, helping an organization build its people experience strategies.
Yeah. And I've also seen too, where fractional people can come in, and we've done this too, where you may have like a head of HR, you might have a head of people, but maybe they're newer to that role and maybe they need a partner, which we've done as well, right? Maybe they need that guidance, that partnership. Or the other thing that we've done, which is, which I'm seeing more and more of in fractional, is you, and we've all been here, and I know you've done things on this, but it's when the leadership team is not listening, right? They're not like listening to their head of HR. Sometimes we get pulled in to help them be that third party, that third neutral party, right? That voice of reason for them to say, hey, your team has been telling you this for a year, right? You might say it and the CEO listens as a fractional person. But then what I always love to say is like, I'm partnering with the HR team and that leadership because at the end of it, I want there to be a bridge that I've made. And now that that relationship is a lot stronger because I've been there, right? And it sometimes it's just for a couple months, just so you can say, yes, here's what I'm seeing. Here's what you need to do. And then as you kind of have that relationship built with the CEO or that leader, you can say, and your team has been telling you this for a year. So you really need to listen to your team, right? Exactly. And so it's one of those partnership things as well.
Yes. Yes. I absolutely agree with that. And I think it's so important for people to know that they have these options out there because especially those departments of one that are really struggling and feeling like they don't have the support that they need, it's really great to know that people like you exist out there to help them build those bridges and connections and help them to gain the confidence that they need in order to be able to get the support of their stakeholders in the business. Sometimes it's a simple thing. You may be saying potato, the business is saying potato. You're saying tomato. The business is saying tomato, right?
Exactly.
It, sometimes it's just so such a simple difference. But to have someone come in on the outside and go, okay, well, what they're really saying is tomato. And can you say tomato? And this is how you would say it, right?
Exactly.
But you can still have tomato. You just need to, when you're speaking to them, you need to say tomato.
Exactly.
And they'll get it, right?
Exactly. And so, I think, and you've probably seen this too, I think we, you know, often in our space, in our industry, and I know you've probably heard this and I've heard this and it always makes me so mad when I hear it, is, oh, HR people don't have business acumen. If I hear that one more time, it's not that we don't have business acumen. And I just said this the other day. we have had the business acumen. We have seen it. We know when these cycles happen. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's either that we're not getting heard because they don't value that, or sometimes it's because maybe that CEO has never managed people before and got lots of funding. We've seen that time and time again. It's a projection actually of their own insecurity on their business acumen.
Absolutely.
That they're putting on you, right? Because nine times out of 10, right? If you ask me who has the most business acumen in the whole business,
it's HR.
Someone sitting in HR. Yeah.
Absolutely. I agree 1000% with that. I absolutely agree. People often have issue with their own insecurities, and so they project it off, right?
Yep.
And it's sad because what it does is it makes a lot of HR people feel like they're incompetent or that they don't know how to build relationships. When the truth of the matter is, the problem isn't them. It's probably the leader or the organization as a whole, right? And I've seen so many good people leave HR because they couldn't navigate that. And that's why I'm here. That's why I exist.
Right.
And do the things that I do to help them go, look, it's not you. Here's what it really is.
Yes.
And here's some things that you could do to change that. Either a lot of the times it's, if you can't change the people, you can change your environment.
Exactly.
And if you
what is the common saying? You're not a tree, right? You can move, right?
Exactly. You are not a tree. You definitely can move, right? And I find a lot of times people just feel stuck. But then when they realize I actually can uproot myself and do something different and be somewhere where my skills are appreciated, where I don't feel like I'm crazy, where people aren't making me feel like I'm crazy. That's the difference. That's the difference.
Absolutely.
We could talk about this stuff all day long, Anessa. I absolutely love talking to you. And I think that we've given our audience enough to understand the difference, what a fractional HR person is and how it works, and the options that they have on the spectrum of fractional consulting, advising. Mm-hmm. I think that's absolutely amazing. Thank you for sharing your insights there. But we are also here to celebrate an amazing day. So today is the day that your book gets released.
Yes. It's
Tell us a little congratulations to you.
Thank you.
I feel like almost this is going to be like the first time ever I am ever going to play this. And I don't think people will ever hear it again. But here we go. Just because we are celebrating your book. Look at that. Standing ovation for you.
I love it.
Congratulations to you, Anessa.
Thank
you. Tell us a little bit about your book.
Yes.
What made you decide to write this book? I know you said you wrote it because you weren't seeing anything like this out there.
Right.
You felt the world needed it.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about what people can expect when they pick up your book.
Oh, yes. Okay. Well, it's called The Revolution of Work, F the Patriarchy and the Workplace It Built. And really, it is a mix of my own stories and what I've experienced. And this is, you know, I always say this and I say this in the book. It's my lived experience as a white woman, which is going to be far better than what most people experience anyway in corporate America. Mm-hmm. And even with that, it's like, here are the things that I've seen and here are the trends that I've seen across some of these, you know, some of these companies. And as I started to think about all the trends that I had seen over 120 companies and things that were really making me like my pet peeves, they were making me mad. And why do we continue down this road? Like, why do we keep seeing these same things?
Mm-hmm.
And then I started talking about my observations in the trends I've seen with colleagues, with other CPOs, with people in HR. And I'm like, oh yeah, I've seen this too. Yeah, this is horrible, right? So I wanted to write the book for a couple of reasons. One, because I didn't see something like it out there. I saw, you know, a lot of what you see is in like an aggregate of experiences that people put together from other people in HR. And then you also see very academic books with a lot of data in HR and scientific pieces right behind that, which all of those are great. We need all of those. But I wanted something that was a little bit of like the in-between and a mix of some of that. And over the last, since I've been posting on LinkedIn, so over the last decade, I have had thousands of people reaching out to me to say, what you put on LinkedIn makes me feel validated. It makes me feel seen. And you probably get this too, Julie, with what you do, right?
All the time.
It's like, I'm not alone. I felt so isolated and I thought I was the only one, and I'm not alone. And thank you for making me feel less alone. Yeah. And I also wrote this book for that, because I wanted to showcase to people like, no, these things happen and you're not alone. And this is happening way more than you think it's happening. And you're not, you don't need to feel isolated. And
you're not going crazy.
Right. You are not crazy. There are people out here that are experiencing this exact same thing. Yeah. And what one of my friends who reviewed the book said in their review and said to me was, it just feels like we're out to drinks or we're out to dinner and we're talking about things. And that's how the book feels. It feels like you, it feels like this is, I imagined your voice in my head when I was reading it, right? Like this feels like you. So for me, it's like, it's kind of like when you sit down with friends and you're trying to discuss things at work, it's a conversation. And that really is the feel of this book.
Yeah.
And I will say, it is not your typical book. It is something that my publishers were really good about working with me on, because I said, I'm not going to do the traditional book. I'm not going to do what's traditional in publishing. And they said, okay, we're here for it. Let's do it. And there were a lot of times where they would say, this is the way we would traditionally do this. Do you want to go down that path? Or do you want to do this thing that you said you wanted to do? And I was, I would say, I want to do the thing I said I wanted to do. Let's do that.
Yeah.
And they're like, okay, but we're just letting you know it's different. That I'm like, okay, let's do it. So I really wanted to push the boundaries of what we're able to do. Kind of like when I started on LinkedIn, I wanted to push the boundaries of what we could say in our space on LinkedIn. And I think that there's a, we're at a very precarious time in our, in history. And we have this supply and demand piece within our labor market, especially in the US, around, we lost so many people to COVID. So many people are now on disability even due to COVID and long COVID. We have lots of baby boomers retiring, and there's not enough Gen Z to fill that gap. And when I was writing, starting to write the book, it was something like 4.5 million less people overall to fill the jobs that were open. Now, they're, you know, the jobs don't always line up with skill sets needed and all of that.
Right.
Sometimes it feels like it's the other way. But realistically, supply and demand of labor in the market is, we actually have a whole lot less people than we need to fill some of the jobs that are needed to be filled. That's going to continue on, because also with Gen Z not just having enough actual people in their population to make up for the baby boomer loss, they're also just opting out of corporate America. They're opting out of the traditional nine to five. They're opting out of that. They're saying, I have lots of options. I can be an influencer. I can do this. I can do that. Right. And so we're going to come to this spot where we need to actually drastically change the way we think about work. And I've been talking about it for years, and you've probably seen this too, where the future of work, I've heard the future of work so many times, I just roll my eyes because, it's just like, what has changed? What's in the future now? Like, it's been 10 years, not enough has changed.
We are in the future. The future is the future. The future is now.
The future is now. Right. I get so tired of hearing it. It's like the future of work. And it's like, okay, but what's different? Nothing's different.
Yeah.
So I just got so tired of hearing the future of work. I was like, no, we don't. We're over the future. Forget that. We need a revolution, because I don't want to just tweak small things. I want to change the structure of work from the top down, from the bottom up. I want to just basically dismantle it and start over
and again.
So, you know, part of it is like, We've built up these things in a way that serves really one part of our, of the human race. And that tends to be white men. And for me, it's everything else that structure is held up for the status quo to remain in place. That's really hurting all of us, even white men.
It
really is hurting them too. And for me, it was around everything that I started to write about kept looping back to holding up that status quo, holding up that status quo. And then I was like, you know what? This is kind of the spine of my book, because this is the thing that everything comes back to.
Yeah.
And I really, you know, I knew I wanted it to be called The Revolution of Work, and the subtitle came later because I kept changing it, moving it, changing it. What else? What I wanted to say. And then when I finally started to realize, oh, the status quo, who came up with this status quo? Okay, cool. And it was like everything kept looping back and connecting to that. And then I was like, okay, now I have my subtitle. So for me, it's just about I want everyone to just stop, pull their head above water and say, why are we doing these things?
Yeah.
Why? Why do we need to keep doing these things in this way? We don't, right? Let's change it. Mm-hmm. Our disengagement mm-hmm. from employees is at the highest that we've seen it. Our stress levels in work are at the highest levels that we've seen it. Our mental health has, you know, our the inability
it's been the worst it's ever been.
Right. It's the worst it's ever been. Mm-hmm. And why do we think it's working? Because it's not. Mm-hmm. None of this is working.
Not. None.
And so that's where I'm like, you know what? I think we need to light a match, burn it down, and let's start
rebuild.
Over. Yeah. Yeah. So
I
that's
love it.
Really why I wanted
burn
all,
it all, down.
All of that.
Let's just burn it all down and start from scratch.
Right.
Burn it to the ground.
Yes.
I love it. I cannot wait to read your book, Anessa, and have another conversation with you after I've read it.
Yes. I love that. Well, and I'll see you at Transform. So bring it and I'll sign it for you. Yes.
Oh, for sure. For sure. I am looking forward to that.
Yes.
It's been such a pleasure talking to you, Anessa. I really
you
have enjoyed
too.
Our conversation. Time just flies so quickly. So yes. I'm going to ask you the very big question that I always ask my guests.
Mm-hmm.
What is the biggest misconception about HR that really bothers you that you want to set the record straight on right here, right now?
Yes. I think I'll go back to what I mentioned earlier about the business acumen.
Mm-hmm.
I get so tired of hearing that. And
yeah,
it really is like it's a game changer if they would just mm-hmm. listen and let us do the things, right? The
yes.
times where we're able to partner, really partner with CEOs mm-hmm. and they really value our expertise, it is mm-hmm. game changing. And
absolutely.
It makes everyone else's job easier in the organization, even theirs, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's one thing that CEOs don't get is if they listen and value our partnership, it actually makes their job easier.
Yeah.
And for me, it also adds to the bottom line. It's just mm-hmm. a win-win all the way around.
Absolutely.
So for me, it's just that business acumen, that partnership is key. Just, mm-hmm. you know, if more CEOs kind of tune into that.
Yeah.
I think we can make some good changes in that direction.
It's true. Definitely. I think it's I want to add to that and just say, I think it's a two-part piece to this.
Mm-hmm.
In that I think there are some HR professionals that are struggling with business acumen. I
mm-hmm.
think I partner with an organization called the Academy to Innovate HR.
Yeah.
And they have an assessment that tests for business acumen, people advocacy, technology, data, all those things in HR. And one of the biggest pieces that most HR professionals struggle with all over the world that take mm-hmm. that test is business acumen.
Yeah.
And I think we take for granted, those of us who know it, those of us who are aware of the importance of building business acumen, take for granted that everyone in HR knows that that's what mm-hmm. they need to do. But the truth yeah. of the matter is they don't.
Right.
And you would know from working all over the world, HR is not the same everywhere.
No.
And leadership globally does not have the same feeling and about HR or people experience or people and culture as other parts of the world do.
Mm-hmm.
And so I know living in the Caribbean, we still have a lot of work to do here to get leaders to actually buy in to people and culture.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of organizations in the Caribbean see that as fluff.
Yep.
And so trying to get that kind of buy-in is a lot harder in the Caribbean.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas people in Europe, especially with countries like Finland, which is one of the happiest countries in the world to live,
right,
have a completely different outlook on what it means to really take care of your people.
Yeah.
And they have a great respect for their HR teams and understanding people and culture in those spaces. We come back to the US or in Canada, and you still see, while some organizations mm-hmm. appreciate it, understand it, it's not the majority across
right.
industries. One of the best experiences that I ever had in my HR career was actually in a gas and oil company.
Really? Really?
One of my best HR career experiences was in a gas and oil company. I learned a lot in that space. That's where I learned about the importance of having buddy systems.
Oh, yeah.
Why I learned the importance of onboarding being continuous, mm-hmm. not just it should be beyond the 90 days. I learned the importance of HR not sticking their finger in everything, but actually holding managers and leaders accountable. I learned the importance of core values. I learned the importance of core values in an organization. And that core values matter more than policy. Because you always want to, policy is dictated by legislation for the most part. You always want to do better than the law. You always want to hear your people. I learned the importance of focus groups and listening to people and not trying to fix things right away, but understanding how people think and felt about certain processes as they move through them. And I learned the importance of agility. So I learned, it was almost like a baptism of fire, but it's where I learned the most about HR. And I definitely appreciated that experience. And that's where I learned about the importance of business acumen. And being able to speak the language of the demurrage department versus the contracts department, understanding the difference between base oils and fuel oils, and, you know, understanding why, you know, how the operations of it all work, moving from one port to the next with oil and blending it to make different things. So you only learn those things. You have to understand the importance of having the desire to understand those things to be able to get the right talent through the door in the organization. It really starts with understanding the business. And sad to say, a lot of HR people do not know that.
They don't know it. And the other the other thing that I love that you pulled out was core values too. Because for me, I mean, I think for years and years, we aligned so many things to core values. And the one caveat I will say about core values is I love core values if they are not just top down, right? I think they should have a buy-in from the organization and they should not be aspirational. They should be how what you are actually living.
The standard, what you're living in the moment.
What you're living. And then what you like, the behaviors that you reward or want to reward, right? You do that and you move towards the even more of that. Like, what are the behaviors we want to continually reward? And then the last piece is that making sure that your core values are aligned to all of the groups within your organization, because you see things like be kind as a core value. And while that's really easy for certain demographics to be kind, it's not as easy as it is for others. Right. And it's like, be kind actually is just this like toxic positivity kind of thing. Right. So it's one of those things where I'm like, do core values if you do it right. And if you don't know how to do it right, call one of us. We'll tell you.
That's right. We'll tell you. We will definitely tell you. I think one person who I absolutely adore, that I always send people to when it comes to developing their core values, is Galen Emanuel. I think he does such a fantastic job of helping organizations with recognizing the importance of having core values and living core values and what that means for an organization, and not to be hypocritical. And I think that if people are struggling with those kind of things, you could check out his content as well. But you can find any one of us. That's just a little, I always like to give a plug to other great people who are doing good stuff in our space. And I think Galen is doing a really good job with helping organizations develop and build core values as But absolutely check out Anessa or myself for that too.
And if you want to just hear somebody talk about amazing core values, and I know you've had her on, I think Hiba Youssef is one of my really good friends.
Love Hiba.
We just talked about this last week in the Revolution at Work retreat. We were talking about core values. So we're, you know, we can talk about these things all
day. There's a lot of us that, yes. The sad thing is we're not the majority, but we're hoping to change that one conversation at a time through moments like this. So absolute pleasure to have you. Anessa, please tell our beautiful people listening to the show today where they can find you on social media if they want to learn more about you, the work you do, or they want to tap into your book.
Amazing. So the book is available on Amazon. So if you have Amazon by you, there should be a Kindle and a paperback version as of today. And to find me, you can find me on LinkedIn. I'm actually a really horrible millennial and I don't do all the other social medias very well. Like I have an Instagram, but I don't do them well. And if you want to check out more about the Revolution of Work and the movement that we're trying to spur, and also get some amazing merch about the Revolution of Work, you can go to revolutionofwork.com. So leave the out. It's just revolutionofwork.com. Awesome. And check that out.
Awesome. Thank you. And that was an absolute pleasure to have you here today. Thank you for joining me for this conversation, for sharing information about your book. I wish you every success, and I'm looking forward to continuing to watch your journey as you develop and grow through these LinkedIn streets.
Oh, yes. I'll see you. And I'll see you in a few weeks, Jolie.
See you in a few weeks.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Thank you for joining me for this episode of HR Sound Off. I hope that you found it useful. You can find this and all other episodes of HR Sound Off on all major podcast platforms. Spotify, Apple, Amazon, you name it, we're there. Remember, HR Sound Off is created by HR professionals for HR professionals. If you would like to share your story, then reach out to us and let us know. Make sure to hit the notification bell and subscribe to HR Sound Off on YouTube as well as Podbean. And we'll see you again when we next sound off.